Let's start.
Okay, good morning. As you haven't seen, we have finally changed the room. This is a 100 place room, so it's okay. You can invite friends if you want. And the other story is that, as you have probably read from the announcement, not all the lessons will be here. Some of them will be in the Auletta 2, which is downstairs in the other corridor. And also there is one day in which we will have lessons in the Accademia. Just note, please, the movement of the calendar. I think on the 22 or 23 of March, we will be in the Laboratorio Morfologico, which is in the first floor, the Accademia 13, okay. So now, I also noticed that most of you have made the assignment on the site, so not all of you, but most of you. I mean, I'm referring to activity one, that was actually posing you some questions about the paper. So we have the double effect of making you read in the paper and trying to reason a little bit about it. And there was one open question, that was the question one. And actually I put score one to each of you that actually compiled the question without any kind of judgment by myself, okay? Also because it was a kind of provocatory question, just to make you making something, okay? So now the grades are adjourned, so if you want to look for your grades, it's okay. I noticed also that some of you didn't try to answer to that. I don't know if they are present here or not, but again, I suggest you to try to not losing contact with this course, because it's not usually it's not an easy course. There is no textbook. It's not like in the first level that you can just take a book and recover everything. So we work with different aspects, methodological, with specific, advanced aspects. So it's probably better for you not losing contact. That doesn't mean that you have to be present every day, but just to at least to make the activities on the site and at least examining the slides. Okay, that's probably the first. Okay, so now moving to today's lesson. Good morning. Today's lesson is divided in two parts. In the first part, we just try to make a short review of what you have actually read on the paper of Michael Levin. And in the second part, we start looking for the chromosomal organization. So that is the first real subject of the course. So, of course, last week we talked about gene regulation. And we made, if you remember, some reasoning about gene regulation. Okay, and of course, I told you at that time that the first level of control is transcription. And this, of course, is quite of obvious in the sense that all of you know that the genes are not every time active in all kinds of cells. Okay, and if there is no transcription, there will be no messenger, so no protein, okay? So the first level of control that is very important is transcription. And actually, this review by Michael Levin is focused on transcriptional control, okay? We will have also, of course, post-transcriptional control in the very last part of the course. But this is the first level. So, just moving through this review that you read already, okay? I just want with you to examine the abstract. So taking the abstract, so these short sentences that are there, okay? It says that comparative genome analysis revealed that organismal complexity scales not with gene number, but with gene regulation. So try to make a reasoning of that. Good morning. Okay, take place. Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
I stopped for a while just because it's the noise of the old furniture. Okay. So, I was saying that this is the abstract of the Michael Levin review that you have as a textbook. And the comparative genome analysis revealed that organisms' complexity scales not with gene number, but with gene regulation. Have you thought about this sentence? The sentence says that it's not the gene number that makes organismal complexity, okay? But it's gene regulation. We have terrific examples. I remember, since I'm a little older than you, 20 years ago, we were starting to have a draft of the human genome DNA sequence, okay? And not only that one, we had already the sequence of the yeast, Saccharomyces cerevisiae. And we had also some other beginning sequence of, you know, other organisms, like Caenorhabditis elegans, do you know that? A small worm, okay? And other things. And so we started to make realistic estimates of the number of genes in genomes. I'm talking about protein coding, because at that time, I mean 20 years ago, we didn't have any kind of feeling about non-coding genes. No, okay? We knew the ribosomal RNA, transferred RNA, and that's it. Okay, so our perception of the genome was coding genes, okay? And starting to make this kind of realistic prospect of how many genes a genome has was coming out some figure that were extremely perplexing. Caenorhabditis elegans, the small worm, has 19,000 protein coding genes. A man, at that time, we thought it has something like 25,000 genes. Today, we know that it's around 20,000. So the number of genes that a small worm and a human being have is almost the same. So this sentence means that it's not the gene number that determines the complexity of an organism, but it is gene regulation. That, if you think about, means the mechanisms and networks of proteins and RNA or whatever, which are able to control the activity of the genes, okay? Move to the second, okay? Okay, move to the second one. Oh yeah, this was just to tell you that if you want, just a curiosity, I don't know if in your first level molecular biology course you did, to examine different genomes that today we have the sequence of. I don't know, maybe. Anyway, if you want to go there, just click and see, and you will see how many genomes now we have complete sequence, okay? So we have, today we have a, not say a complete, because the organisms are so many, but quite a good look, quite a good glimpse about how the genomes are. Okay, so this is the site from NCBI. Are you familiar with NCBI? Have you did already something? Okay, so if you go to NCBI, there is one of the here. There is a small window, you know, a window menu, and you find this genome, and you just put a name, and you will find if any organism has or not the sequence made. Okay. Okay. Move to the second sentence in the abstract. Okay. The second sentence says, recent efforts indicate that human genome likely contains hundreds of thousands of enhancers, with a typical gene embedded in a milieu of tens of enhancers. So again, this is a kind of novel concept that we have to take in mind and to think about. Because it says that we have hundreds of thousands of enhancers. Okay? So this number, hundreds of thousands, already tells you that they are much, the number is much higher than the genes. Okay? And this implicates also that you have many enhancers controlling a single gene. Okay? This is a kind of demonstration, if you want, that the first sentence was true. Gene regulation. So you have one gene, and this gene is controlled by many, many different sequences and answers. Okay? So, as opposed to the simple organization of bacteria that we have talked about last week, okay, in which you have a single controlling sequence, promoter, or operator, as usually the prokaryotic guys say, operator, okay? And you have many genes under control of this single operator, we have a complete opposite situation. We have a single gene which is controlled by many switches, many sequences. Okay, what is the meaning of that? The meaning is that, of course, a single gene should be used by different cells, different tissues, in different developmental stages, and responding to different stimuli. So we have many, many different things, and all these things should converge on a single gene. So evolution has decided not to make a single switch when you turn the light on, off, but to have many, many different controls. Okay, and this is probably a way to really regulate or control expression of the genes, transcription of the genes, in which you have to have many okay. Okay, so before starting expression of a gene, you have to be sure that A situation is good, B situation is good, C situation is good. So you have to check all these things, then you can express the gene. Okay, so this is the reason. Good. So we go to the next sentence. Sorry, was not that one. Okay, well, this one. Say that proliferation of cis regulatory DNA is accompanied by increased complexity and functional diversification of transcriptional machineries, recognizing distal enhancers and core promoters, by the high-order spatial organization of genetic elements. So what is this sentence? It says that proliferation of cis regulatory DNA, why proliferation? Because this is seen from an evolutionary point of view, of course. Eukaryotes start with simple yeast, okay, and then go through different complexity and up to the mammals, okay? And so if you look at the complexity, the organization of the small yeast or fungi in general, you find simpler situation in which you have promoter, maybe one enhancer or two, no more than that, and then the genes, okay? And then this, there is an increasing complexity going on the evolutionary scale in which you increase the number of this enhancer, regional control. So this, and it's accompanied by increased complexity of functional diversification of transcriptional machinery. Means that to deal with this increased complexity of regulatory elements, there is no, I mean, a single RNA polymerase, a single complex is not enough. We have to have different complexes, okay? And please note that this is not referring to RNA polymerases themselves. It is true that in eukaryotes you have three different polymerases. I mean, RNA polymerase 1, 2, and 3, if you remember. But 1 and 3, they are devoted to a different business. They take care of ribosomal RNA and other small RNA, okay? Non-coding. The only one which takes care of protein coding gene is RNA polymerase 2, okay? So this enzyme actually transcribes all the coding genes, no problem. What is changing is the apparatus that is around this polymerase, okay? You have many proteins that actually cooperate with this polymerase, okay, to bring the polymerase to the correct gene in the correct place and to activate in the correct moment. Okay, so in this kind of complexity, you will find different complexes of protein helping the polymerase, and not a single one, as you usually find in simple organisms. Okay. High order spatial organization of genetic elements, that is just after that sentence, okay? So transcription machine recognizing distal enhancers and co-promoters and by the high order spatial organization of genetic elements. And this is exactly what I told you last week, saying that there is no geometrical, topological rationale, at least in our end, okay, for the spatial organization of genomes. I told you. There is no physical location, okay, of these elements of control. There is no linear organization of the genes that are to be co-expressed or something like this, okay? So in our vision of the genome, there is no spatial organization, topological organization. Okay. Hi. And this is the last story is that, of course, in this review, they will also discuss the dynamic communication of enhancers with the genes. Okay, so we have many enhancers, how they communicate with the gene. Okay. And we review progresses in unraveling one of the outstanding mysteries of the modern biology, how this communication of remote enhancers with the genes will work in the specification of cellular identity. We still don't know. We have many hypotheses of how the system works, and we still don't know how it works perfectly. And this is one of the most important problems today. So, just examining shorter in 5 minutes, just examining the figures that you all have seen. This is figure one that actually brings to your attention some of the most, important concepts in the review. In the first figure here, figure A, this is the Drosophila development. Any of you has studied the Drosophila embryonal development? Yes. Most of you. In which course, please?
Developmental biology.
Who's the prof? Okay, very good. But not all of you come from the same triennium, from the same. So maybe you didn't study. You did. Okay. Okay. So is anybody of you not aware of this development? No. Everybody knows it very well. And if you remember, this is the very first stage. Not the very first, but I mean when the embryo has something like 6,000 nuclei, and then the cells, if you remember, you remember that this is a kind of syncytial, syncytium. I don't know how to pronounce it exactly in English, but anyway, syncytium, say in Latin, okay. Because there is no cellularization in the first division, after the first division. This is probably a reason of being very quick, because this development is like an explosion. So to get 6,000 nuclei, you can imagine there are lap division, mitosis, meiosis, and mitosis, a very impressive pace, and actually there is no cellularization. Then finally, when this kind of mitosis stops, you have 6,000 nuclei on the periphery of the embryo, okay? And at that point, you will have cellularization. So the membrane invaginates and then encloses the nuclei, okay, to make it cells. So you have a kind of epithelium, okay, all around that is composed more or less of 6,000 cells. And then at this point, you start differentiation of the cells, okay? So the embryo starts to differentiate what is the head, what is the tail, and all the structures and so on. And actually, gene regulation starts. This is important to us, okay? Gene regulation starts. And as you can see, in this figure, you see in situ hybridization showing you the expression of this gene, even skipped is the name, and this illustrates what actually is the biology, even skipped. So it means that this is skipped in the even segments. As you can see, the embryo is segmental. You have several segments, and they are formed. I don't know if the resolution of the figure is enough, but if you look thoroughly to this figure, you see that there are few nuclei in each stripe. Okay, this stripe is composed of maybe 2-3 nuclei as a thickness. Okay, and those nuclei express this Evans-Skipping gene, but the adjacent nuclei do not at all. So you understand the biological problem, the regulatory problem. I mean, two adjacent cells, one is expressing the gene, the other one is not. What happens in that particular place of the embryo, making one cell expressing the gene, the other one not? This is a very important biological problem. Actually, this has been quite solved, and we will examine it in the fourth chapter, okay? But what is the story today is that this gene, the coding sequence of this gene is this yellow part here. This is the arrow showing you the transcription start site of the gene, okay? And this yellow box is the gene itself, okay? And you see that here on the left side and here on the fourth, on the right side, you have different E boxes that are enhancers. Okay? And incredibly, but you can believe it or not, but each enhancer is active only in one segment. So if you look, for example, for this reason, they are numbered as 3, 7, 2, 4, 6, 5, 1. Because each enhancer is active only in that segment. The other enhancers are not active. Okay? So why an enhancer should be active in one segment and not in other segments? Probably because the concentration or the expression of transcription factors in that particular position of the embryo is good to activate that enhancer. And the concentration of other transcription, different transcription factor in another segment is good to sustain the expression in another segment and so on. And actually, if you remember, those of you who have studied the early development of this guy, you remember that there is a gradient of proteins. You remember Bicoid, Oscar, okay? They are produced by the mother. So when the X is deposited and is matured, you have follicular cells around, and the follicular cells charge the egg with mRNA or proteins, but only from one side. So there is a gradient of concentration of different factors. Okay, so in each segment you have a specific concentration of factors that work only on one enhancer, and this illustrates what we said before. So many enhancers, one gene, and each enhancer actually respond to a particular environment, particular situation. Okay, figure B illustrates another story about the PTX1 gene, in which, as you can see, there are different enhancers again, in which each of them is active only in one tissue, as it is illustrated by the figure. Okay, the first one is active only in thymus, the second is active only in hinlim, the third in neuromast, and so on. And we know it very well, because in this small fish, when you have mutation, for example, here, this is an inactivating mutation, okay? And so you see that this organ is not developed correctly. So it means that, of course, you have a specific location tissue, a tissue distribution of the activity of the nerve, okay? And the third figure here in C illustrates the organization of OXID complex in mice. Those of you who have followed the developmental biology course know what the OX genes are. You remember that in each organism we have OX genes. Homeobox means the acronym. You don't. I see you are a little lost on this. Okay. A little lost. Okay, we will take it again. Anyway, this is our loci, in which there are several genes that encode several transcription factors that usually are expressed in the anterior to posterior direction in the organism. Okay. And this is very important. And as you can see, again, this illustrates only the OXD, that is one of the cluster in mice. And you see that we have different enhancers in the left and different enhancers on the right. And when you have this kind of concentration of enhancers in a relatively small piece of the genome, we call them super enhancers, because of the organization. And you see that this domain here, C domain, on the left, okay, is expressed, is working in hand and digit formation, okay? So in the formation of the hand, okay? While the other enhancer on the right is expressed only in the arm and forearm. Okay, so this kind of different, again, different regulation. So another concept is that that you see in figure C, another concept that you have in mind is that this kind of interaction of enhancers with the promoters is not completely free. Okay, imagine to have a chromosome. On the chromosome we find genes, enhancers, 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 another gene, enhancer, 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 another gene, and so on, so on. Okay? So you can think that you have either a proximity effect, in the sense that the enhancer can interact only with the proximal gene, the most closest. Okay? This is not true. Okay? And the other situation can be that since chromosomes are flexible, you can have interaction of any enhancer with any promoter. Okay? And this is not true again. Usually the chromosome is divided in domains. We will study better this kind of situation, but just to have some idea, the chromosome is, let's say, physically divided in domains in which interaction is possible. Okay? And we call them TADs, that means topologically associated domains. That means that interaction within the TADs is possible, outside the TADs is not. Okay, we move to the future figure. Oh, sorry, I had larger images for that, but don't worry, it's okay. So the other figure, just to discuss that one in 10 minutes, is the concept of specialized transcriptional machinery. When we were talking about there is not one single polymerase and polymerase complex for all the situation, and this illustrates exactly this concept. So you have specialized transcriptional machinery that work in different situations. And as you can see here, you have, for example, complexes that are in the proximity of the polymerase to point of attachment that are different, okay, not only in different tissues, okay, but also in different stages of development. For example, in this case, you see that in ESCs, so in embryonal stem cells, you have this kind of complex on a specific gene, that is this POOF. This is encodes for a developmentally relevant transcription factor. Okay, and you see that you have specific components of this complex that the promoter of this gene. Okay, while this is EB is embryoid bodies, so the little later stage of development, in which you see that this gene that map, this is a MAP kinase. Okay, and you see that the complex of proteins that you find at the promoter is different from the other one. So you have specific complexes in different stages. Okay, that's another concept that you have to understand. And you see here has in all the other cases in which the authors, Michael Levine, has chosen to make schemes. You have different situations with different complexes. Okay, it's just we don't go through all these images because it's kind of complicated. But just the take-home message is we may have different complexes at the promoters. Okay. Good. And also we have in some cases gene-specific core promoters. So some gene requires a specific complex of proteins, another gene requires different complexes. Okay. Okay. So as you can see, you remember that is our convention. When you see a box like green with a yellow sentence inside or a few words inside, means that you have to take care of your background about that particular concept. So when we say pre-initiation complex, if you don't know or don't remember what it is, just please go back to your book and try to find out what it is. And also the other concept of mediator. Who knows what is the mediator? Nobody of you? Well, do you remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. Any other suggestion about mediator? Say?
No, we were talking about our first.
Ah, okay.
Our first in
second year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, maybe that. Okay, we will talk a little bit about mediator in the third part, third chapter of the. Anyway. Mediator is Mediator is a kind of big complex. It has been solved by many, many different studies, crystallography. It's a big complex, like something like 2 megadaltons. It's a huge protein. And it has been solved by crystallography, especially by computer-assisted electron microscopy. So it's a kind of difficult proteins to understand. But I just show you this slide. I mean, it's figure 3. It's not figure 3 of the review, so no mystery. Just to concentrate on this, I mean, in this mediator, we have a different conformation that is interesting to see. You see, this is the image that it has been reconstructed by computer-assisted electron microscopy. Okay, this is the model of the shape of this protein. Just imagine that inside you have something like 20 different protein subunits, but you don't see them. Okay, it's just a complex. And you see that this is the complex which was isolated in a specific experimental situation. Okay, so by making VP16. VP16 is a transcription factor from a viral transcription factor. Okay? So in the context of a virus infection. Okay? And what people could isolate from cells infected, okay, by making an immunoprecipitation, co-immunoprecipitation, using an antibody against VP16. Okay? So you have an antibody. You take the transcription factor, and then you find the proteins which are associated. Okay, then you isolate all these complex and make millions of pictures with electronic microscopy and try to reconstruct the shape of this complex, and you see this image there. Okay, then in the second panel here, in the center one, okay, you see that is just removing the VP16. So when you remove, okay, you make a salting or something, so you dissociate the transcription factor from the mediator, okay, and you find this shape, okay. Then you make another experiment, and you take another transcription factor, which is called the SRABP, means steroid response element binding proteins transcription factor, and make the same kind of experiment. So you take an antibody against SRIBP, immunoprecipitate, and then take the molecule which is associated to make pictures and reconstruct the shape, and you get that kind of shape that is different, as you can see, is different both from the unliganded mediator and from the mediator which is bound to the VP16s. What is the message of this figure? Is that this mediator, which actually is what your colleague here said, is the complex which mediates interaction from enhancer to promoters. Okay? So it's the protein that which is in between the. The enhancer is very far away, will have transcription factor bound to it, and how to communicate with the promoter through this mediator protein. Okay? And this mediator protein has a shape that changes depending on the kind of interaction with different transcription factor. Okay, so this is a kind of dynamic and plastic module, molecular module, which can adapt to the different situation, but it's always in between enhancers and promoters. Okay? Good. And this is the figure 3. Then we have... okay, this is just illustrating another story when the PIC, so the pre-initiation complex protein binder to the DNA template, or say to the promoter. Again, you have a dynamic change of the protein and so on. But we will examine this in a better way in the future. Okay, and this again refers to the TF2D. You remember what is TF2D? Do you? Okay, try to translate. TF stands for transcription factor. Two or second stands for RNA polymerase 2. So it's transcription factor working with polymerase 2. And D is just an ordering letter, okay? A, B, C, and so on and so on. So do you remember more or less what it is? This is a PIC component, you remember? Yeah, okay. Very good. Your colleague says it contains TBP. You remember what is TBP? Yeah? Data binding protein. You remember that some promoters in mammals, in higher eukaryotes, some promoter contains this data box. Okay? And there is a special protein which is called a TBP, Tata binding protein, which recognizes this element. Okay, Tata box is usually placed at something like 30 nucleotides upstream the transcription start site. Okay, so it makes a geometrical position of the polymerase, and the polymerase will land there and then start to transcribe. Okay, this is TBP. Why I said a special protein? Anybody of you justifies my word spatial? Do you remember anything about TBP? No. It's a saddle-shaped protein, like something like this. You remember? No, you don't. And it actually binds to DNA, making a bend, terrific bend to the DNA, something like 90 degrees. The DNA that is right, okay, like this, because the protein sits on the DNA and opens the minor groove, opens it. Okay, so it turns away and it makes something like 90 degree turn on the DNA. So this, for this reason, is special. Of course, the majority of transcription factors do not turn that much the DNA, do not bend it, okay? So it's kind of special. But just to complete the story about TBP, can you tell me the percentage of human genes possessing a Tata box? I make a multiple choice question to you. Less than 10%, 10 to 50%, 50 to 90%, all of them. Yeah, the question is, how many genes in mammals, so in human, for example, possess a Tata box? Okay, this kind of element in the proximity of the transcription start site of genes. That is actually what you find in all the books. Okay, when you take a book, you always, all the books talk about Tata box. Okay, so the four multiple choices are 0 to 10%, 10 to 50, 50 to 90. All of them. What you choose. Please, go ahead. Try to make. Who votes for the first one? 0 to 10. Who will vote for the second one? 10 to 50. Okay. Who votes for the 50 to 90? Who votes for all of them? We have a participation to the vote that is not really fantastic. Anyway, okay. So it's 17%. 17%. And so one wonders why all the books report about this Tata box, since it's a minority of the promoters, for one simple reason that you will learn in the following lesson. Tata box genes are very easy to study. You can find a promoter, short sequence, that we call promoter with a Tata box, and it always start exactly 30 nucleotides downstream the Tata box, the transcription, okay? So for a searcher, it's very easy to isolate the promoter, put a reporter gene downstream, and then, wow, this works. And on the contrary, all the other promoters, 83% that are non-Tata box promoters, they are kind of fuzzy guys. They have longer sequences, and the transcription starts is everywhere. So very difficult to study. Okay, so for this simple reason, we have the books full of the Tata box and not of the other kind of genes. But anyway, we will study them. Okay. So this is coming back to the holotype TF2D. TF2D is a complex of something like 12 to 13 to 14 proteins together with the TBP. And this complex actually is at the start site, in the peak of almost all the genes. In many genes, there is no interaction of the TBP with DNA, but still it is there. And as you can see, this holo TFD also has different shapes depending on the kind of proteins that you see here that is will bind to it. Okay, so depending on the activators, let's say it's a kind of dynamic structure again. Okay, so this we have seen it already, and so we are at the end of the first lesson. And I just want to make, this is not a test for you, I mean, it's a test for you, but it's especially a test for the wireless, for the wireless of this room, just for me to know if everything works. So do you have Socrative already in your phones? You have used it in the first semester? You never? Really? Very good. Don't worry, we will have it. Okay, so let's go to this one. Okay. Okay. So you go to Socrative, take a Google, find Socrative, and then log in as a student. Okay, it's a small program. It's not a big problem. It's online. It's better if you can go by your desktop or telephone or whatever. Most of you have a laptop or iPad or whatever. If anybody has not, you can use, yeah, telephone. Yeah, the name is Socrative, okay. Then you, when you are ready to go, as a student, I say, so you have to log in as a student or to register, whatever. It takes only a few minutes. When you are ready, please tell me. And then you can ask to enter a class. You see here, this is the identification of the class, this kind of password here. 3CKURJ4KI. This is the class, I mean that you enter my class. When you're ready, please tell me. Are you ready? No. I know it's quite invisible that there is 3CKURJ4KY. Sorry? Can I repeat the room, say? The room is 3CKURJ4KY. Have you got it? Okay. Okay. Just wait for the last one. We have still 8 persons on the last question. Then we stop. Okay, I found it very interesting, isn't it? It's kind of, to me, it's very useful because I see in the columns, I see very, very well which are the subjects that I have to re-explain to you. I mean, the red ones, of course. Can you please tell me what is the question E, for example? Question, the one that is red, the first one that is completely red. What is that? I cannot see the line. A. What is the question? You can see any longer on your computer? No? You cannot navigate back, right? No. Okay. I can see. Anyway, I will show you the results complete and then discuss the question next tomorrow. Okay, so we have the complete situation. And also I will correct the one that were open question, like 11 and 20 here. And this is the question 8. It actually was, the commonly used NGS technology show the following features. Okay. So this is important because just Francesco, Professor Cordero, who will follow me this morning, asked me if we discuss any of this NGS library preparation. And I didn't know what to answer because last year students told me that most of you made a course with, what is called the course is biomolecular laboratory, right? And they were explaining you how to make NGS. Is that correct? Okay, so everybody has something. Okay, we will discuss again. Okay, NGS, because it's probably the most important application today, so we have to understand well how it works, but we will discuss later. And then Francesca Cordero will tell you something about library preparation at the beginning of the lesson, because she needs to discuss how the data are managed and so on. But we will come back to this. And the other one was... The completely red question was this one, 16. Okay, have you heard the term chromosomal territory? Never heard about it. Okay, very good. So you will follow it the next hour of lesson. I don't stop, just go through the next lesson because I stopped already. Talking, we will finish a little earlier, so you will have a longer interval between my lesson and the next one. So thank you very much for participating in this Socrative test. Was this amazing? Yeah, quite. Yeah, to me, yes. Okay. So let's move to the following subject. That is actually. As you can see, something changed because the lessons before were labeled as L0 because it was just an introduction. Now we start with the main body of the course, and so we have lesson 1-1. So lesson 1 actually talks about nuclear organization. So this is the reason why we talk about chromosomal territories. Okay, so as a first things you will find starting from this afternoon, because I have still to set on the Moodle site, you will find something that is called a methodological wiki. It is a wiki in the sense that there are subjects that are suggested to you that you will contribute to it. Okay? You will find all the instructions on the site, no problem. Okay, so let me introduce you the next textbook that you will have on the site. It is not yet available, but it will be as soon as you exit the classroom. Okay. And this is a textbook, is a review from Pamela Geyer. It is probably one of the big scientists working on this subject, and you will find everything you need inside this review. It's a short one, so don't worry. Okay, so the problem starts with the nucleus. This is an electron microscopy picture of a nucleus. It's a rat liver cell, so it's common. You probably have seen this kind of pieces several times in your courses before, cytology or histology or whatever. But the first thing that we see is that nucleus is not homogeneous, okay? Electronic density changes a lot. You have a periphery that is electronic dense, the periphery around the nucleus. Then you have a nucleolus that again is a kind of electronic dense. And the density means that the molecular organization is not the same, of course. Okay? So you have denser and less dense regions. So one of the first sentences that you will find on this review is gene-poor regions and silenced genes are frequently found at the nuclear periphery. Same as heterochromatin. Are all the terms that you find in this slide familiar to you? Gene poor regions, silenced genes, nuclear periphery, of course, and same as heterochromatin. This is all definition. When cytologists look at this image, they say, okay, these black dense regions are called heterochromatin, okay? And the lighter one, we will call them euchromatin. Okay, this is kind of very old definition, and we keep this definition also today. So, don't be ashamed, use hetero and euchromatin is correct. I'm kidding, of course. The question is, gene poor regions, what does it mean? Have anybody of you studied a little bit about the genome organization in the first level? Not really. You're ashamed to answer? Say no, it's okay for me. You don't. Okay. So we will examine this a little bit further. Okay, but just to have an idea, our genome is everything but homogeneous, okay? You have regions in which you have many, many genes stuck together, okay, with a very high density of genes in some regions, and sometimes you have regions in which there is really nothing. I mean, we discussed that already last week. Nothing is not good. Maybe they are repetitive sequences, for example, okay, or transposable elements or whatever else. But you have maybe millions of bases in which you just don't find any gene, okay? These are called gene poor regions, of course, okay? And the other ones are called gene rich regions, of course, okay? But one of the story is that this gene poor region, of course, they are not expressed, okay? They are not transcribed, okay? So maybe they are not transcribed. Anyway, they have to be, especially if they are transposable elements of repetitive sequences coming from, for example, viruses or something like this, they have to be kept to an unexpressed situation, okay? So they have to be in some way excluded from the transcription machinery, okay? Is that clear to you? Okay, and silenced genes means that there are genes, as we told many times, that in particular cells have not to be expressed. They must not be expressed. Last week we talked about hemoglobins, about many, many other genes, okay? So these genes, we call them silenced in that particular cell model, okay? So the story is that both these gene poor regions and the silenced genes are frequently found at the nuclear periphery. Okay? So if we look where the genes are, the first thing is that we find the genes that are silenced or gene poor regions in this periphery that, as you can see from this image, is heterochromatic. Okay, so it's in the periphery. It's normal. They are silenced, so they are heterochromatic. Okay. How we do know this kind of notion? This is important. I told you again, it's very important for you to understand always how our knowledge come from, okay? So what is the methodology we can employ to be sure of what we say? Okay? Guess, please. How can we know that the silenced genes or gene pool region and so on and so on and so are at the nuclear periphery? Have you any kind of suggestion to give me? A guess. Please. Okay. Do you know that? You told me that you know last week, so you just to remember. Fish. fluorescent in situ hybridization. Okay? You want to know if a gene is in the center, in the middle of the nucleus, or in the periphery, or whatever else. Okay? You take a probe. Remember, it is a probe. It's a short nucleic acid sequence, small piece of DNA. Okay? Which is complementary to a sequence of your gene. Okay? You label this probe and then hybridize to a section, okay, or to cells on a slide, 7, okay? And this is a particular variation of this methodology, which is called immunofish, and as you can see, is in yellow. So means that you will contribute to the methodological wiki some information about how the immunofish works. It's your responsibility, not mine. Okay? Good. So anyway, in a way, in the other way, you see this is an image that scientists made studying a gene. Okay, this is the IGH loci. Do you know what is IGH? Please? Yes, you know. EIG stands for immunoglobulin. H stands for heavy chain. Heavy and light chains make immunoglobulins. You remember? Okay. So this IGH locus, okay, has been studied in two different cell lines. Fibroblast on the left, pro B cells on the right. Do you know what is a fibroblast? Yes. Do you know what is a pro B cell? Lymphocyte. Yes. Okay. So please comment on this picture. Where can we observe the two IG? Why I say two? The two IGH loci. Why I say two?
There are two copies.
Two alleles, but we are diploid. So we have a paternal and a maternal chromosome. They both contain, okay, IGH. So we will see two spots, okay, in cells. Can you see the spots? So please answer. Where is the genes? Where is this loci, IGH loci, are placed in fibroblast? Periphery. Where they are placed in B cells?
In the middle.
Why? Yeah, of course, because B cells are lymphocytes. They will express immunoglobulins, right? Okay, can you follow me? So the loci are placed in the middle of the nucleus, in the euchromatin region. Okay, in the fibroblast, on the contrary, fibroblasts never think about using immunoglobulins, of course, and they will place the genes in the periphery. Okay. Good. Okay, so immunofish and whatever is one of your Moodle activities. Okay, you will find something like this one in the Moodle. Okay, this is the methodological wiki. There are also instructions how to work with and so on. And please contribute to this subject at your like. I mean, I will have several subjects. You will choose the one that you will contribute to, and then we'll contribute. Okay, and this, of course, this kind of wiki will be available for everybody, so you can see what is the result. Okay, so this is a morphological method, right? Because we see the morphology of the nucleus and where the loci are and so on. And the next question is, can you suggest any other method, non-morphological, to address whether silenced genes are placed in periphery and so on? Can you suggest something? We talked already about this last week also. Anyway, I let you with this question in mind. We will discuss it later on, okay? Then move to the next. Okay. So in the very first paragraph of your textbook, you will find this kind of discussion. You say eukaryotic genomes are divided into chromosomes that occupy, this you know, right? You know that our genome is divided in different chromosomes, right? How many chromosomes do we have? Yeah, 2 by 23. Okay. So they are occupy defined regions or territories within the nucleus. So this is the definition. Chromosomal territory means, that was the one that you were not able to answer in the test. Okay. Chromosomal territory is the place in the nucleus which is occupied by a single chromosome. Okay, so in our interface nucleus of a man, of a woman, of a human being, okay, you will find 46 different chromosomal territories. Okay? These chromosome territories are arranged based on the transcriptional activity and chromatin landscape of domains. In general, transcription inside the domain resides the nuclear periphery, blah, 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 blah. But what is better to know is the second part of this sentence, because they say changes in nuclear position. Pay attention to this phrase. Changes in nuclear position are observed for stress-induced and developmentally regulated tissue-specific genes. Means exactly what you saw on the slide before, that the position of the genes is changed when the cell differentiates. Okay? And this function of what... it follows the profile of expression of this gene in a cell. Okay. So, in this sentence that you have read and you will read better in the textbook, there are several new concepts: chromosomal territories. Okay. So now you know what they are, and chromatin landscape means the panorama, you say the landscape, okay, of where to find the chromatin, euchromatin and heterochromatin. Then you know what is a transcriptional silent domain, is the place in which there is no expression, transcriptionally active domains, and then changes in nuclear position, okay. And many, many times you have this situation that you find in the bottom part of the slide, so the input, so a signal that tells something to the cell will result in a tissue-specific and nuclear reorganization, so a dynamic different places of the different chromosomes, and to give a correct post-transcriptional regulation. So I think that this dynamic genomic organization within the nucleus is a novel concept to you. Is that correct? I say it again. This dynamic organization of the chromosomes in the nucleus, dynamic, is probably a novel concept for you in your mind. Is that correct? Yeah. Okay. To me also. It's a kind of novel story that emerges from genomic studies. Okay, let me see how we get this kind of information. Okay, so the first is chromosomal territories. You heard already about fish. Okay, fish. So think about, I can take the sequences that are sparsed in all a chromosome. For example, I take chromosome X or chromosome Y, chromosome 1, and so on, and I take several small sequences, all the chromosome, and then make probe, okay? Make a series of probe, which will be specific to each chromosome, okay? Then I will attach a fluorescent die to all of them, okay? All props will have a specific die, and then I will use them to make a fish. And this is the color that they get. This is a metaphase reconstructed image of our 23 pairs of chromosomes. Each of them has been painted by a different fluorescent chromosomal set of probes, okay? This is something that today in the cytogenetic laboratories uses a lot, because instead of just making, you know, the metaphasic plate and then trying to recognize chromosome 1, chromosome 2, and so on, so they paint them in this way. So also they are able to recognize, for example, when you probably heard about leukemias, the disease of blood cells, in which very often you have translocation of chromosome. It's a piece of chromosome that jumps on the other one, and vice versa. And so with this kind of fish, it's very easy to see it. It's very diagnostic, okay? Then you can use this one, not only on the metaphase plate, okay, that is the cytogenetic interest, but we can use on interface nuclei, okay? You can take interface nuclei and look what happens, okay? So just see what happens, okay? And this will also illustrate a concept in the review. They say that the chromosome territories are not mixed together. Each of them keeps its own territory. Let me see the figure. Wow. These are the figures. On the left is the natural figure that you can see on the fluorescent microscope. On the right is a kind of reconstruction by an image analysis in order to make it clearer. Okay. And this is a reconstruction of the cell nuclei on the bottom right. So you can see in the left side there is no mixing. No mixing at all. Each chromosome in interphase occupies a given territory in the nucleus. Okay? A question arises, because before we said that we have the heterochromatin at the periphery, okay? Now we say that each chromosome has a territory. Can we conclude that some chromosomes are completely silenced and some other chromosomes are not? Actually, all the chromosomes are in part heterochromatic and in part euchromatic. So you have to imagine this kind of nucleus as a kind of, you know, situation in which you have each chromosome occupies a territory, and this territory is a kind of conical, okay, space in which you have part in the periphery and part in the center. So you see that kind of difficult to imagine. Anyway, this is the situation, okay? And last question, then we stop. We have seen that this kind of CT, this kind of chromosomal territory, is actually, have you seen from the IGH loci, that they are placed in different places, in different cells. So this in some sense implies that chromosomal territories are not the same in all the cell types, right? So let me show you something, just quick, just to... Okay, this kind of different organization of nuclei in different cell types is a very old concept. Okay, if you take a normal, you can use that link, but anyway, I mean, you can take an old cytology book and you find this kind of concept, okay? You go to here, you will find many different images of nuclei from different, okay? This is the electron microscopic atlas of cell tissues and organs in the internet. You see here, there is a collection of nuclei. Do they look equal? They are all different. So it means that the macroscopical organization of nuclei are different from cell to cell, cell type to cell type, right? And this is good, but the story is, can we study this in a deep way, just not to look at the shape of the heterochromatin, but look inside? And there was a kind of, I just show you in 10 minutes, the older, this is a quite old study, it's from 2004, so it's a kind of historical story, but in which these guys studied the distribution of chromosomes in different nuclei, okay? They took, don't worry about this, I will put in the slides for you, but not discussing. So what they did was to take mouse cells, okay, primary cells of a mouse, so not cultivated cells, primary cells, liver, lymphocytes, lung cells, and they ran chromosome painting. This is a 2004 paper, so it makes that all this kind of different chromosomal painting were not really yet available, so they studied one chromosome at the time, okay, so one chromosome in each cell. And then looking at this, for example, you see that this is chromosome 5 in the mouse, okay? And you see that in liver, you see this kind of, let's say, middle nuclei situation in which often the chromosome are, the two chromosomes, paternal and maternal, are quite close together, okay? Then in lymphocytes, you see that they are still in the nucleoplasm in the center, but a little farther from each other. And then when you go to lung cells, you see that at least one of the two chromosomes is peripheric. You see that? Okay? So, of course, you can tell me, okay, these are two cells, but to conclude something, you are probably to look at 1,000 cells, not two cells, because you can choose the ones that actually accomplish your theory, of course. So I actually they made the statistics, of course. Okay, so they started this kind of story in many, many different cells and tried to make a map in the statistics. So what they did, it was very simple. They had image analysis of the nuclei, automated image analysis, of course, the nuclei, and they divided the nuclei in five concentric stories, okay, like this, okay, and this is not scaled, sorry, I'm not able to draw, but I mean this 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and actually these areas are the same area, the same surface, okay. Then they look at the chromosome where it is. For example, the chromosome is there, so it's position 1. If the chromosome is here, in position 5, and whatsoever. So they could count automatically the position of the... Okay. So what you see here in the figure is... Sorry. What you see here is that this is the center, you see, 1. Sorry, I put the numbers in the other way around, but it's not very... I don't see my mouse anymore. Okay. So this is the, okay, this is the center, and this is the periphery, okay? As you can see here in the image. And these are the different kind of cells that they examined in the mouse. And this is the distribution, for example, of chromosome 15. So chromosome 15, you see that there is, in some cases, it's just equally distributed all around. For example, in this case here, that is small lung cells, this violet trace here, you see that most of the cases is peripheric. You see there? That there is a completely uneven distribution of the position of the chromosome. Okay, so they run this kind of story for all the chromosomes, for all the cells, and so on, and they concluded that actually there is a tissue-specific position of the chromosome, okay? Don't be surprised at the fact that there are a level of uncertainty, because experimentally the cells are not all the same. Okay, you take a tissue, you know how to establish a primary culture? You learn about a little bit. You take a piece of tissue, then you treat with enzymes to disrupt the matrix, then you put the cells in culture. And in this process, it's not really, you know, it's not really a normal physiological situation for the cells. So it's also normal that when you study the position of the chromosome, something changes a little bit. But anyway, this is what they saw in this story. But not, okay, this is the situation for all the, this is chromosome 1, 5, 6, and so on, and so on, and so on. So they found that actually all the chromosomes are a position, and also they made a relative positioning. So they stained, in this case, three chromosomes together with three different probes, chromosome 12, 14, and 15, and there are colors, as you can see. The green is chromosome 12, the red is chromosome 14, and the blue one is chromosome 15. And they studied in lymphocytes, in Lajeun cells, Bohr cells, kidney cells, liver cells, and so on. And they concluded that there is also, don't look at this, don't forget it. There is also a significant positioning of the couples of chromosomes. So in some cells, two chromosomes kiss together, okay, so they stay very close each to other. And in other cells, the same two chromosomes are far away from one to the other one. So this illustrated how the chromosome stay in a cell-specific position in all the tissue examined. Okay, and again, this is explaining you how they are in the different cell types. So we are at the very end of the lesson. Don't be worried about I just missed many figures, but don't worry, this is not a very important thing is the concept that you learned today. Okay, so the conclusion is first that interface chromosome occupy discrete territories within the nucleus. Okay. This is not a trivial conclusion. It's like having a dish of spaghetti, okay? And then another dish of spaghetti. The first one is tomato sauce, the other one is pesto. Okay, you put together, because chromosomes are spaghetti, actually. It's something like, okay? So you mix together, and if you just roll a little bit or move a little bit, some part of them will mix together. Okay, but this is not the situation with chromosome. Chromosome will never mix together. So it means that the organization, molecular organization of chromosome, in some sense keeps them away from each other. I don't mean that there is no contact point. We will see that there are contact points between chromosomes. Okay. But they keep an individuality during the interface. Second conclusion is that the position of interface chromosome is cell-specific. And this goes exactly with the concept that genes are not placed in the genes, individual genes are not placed in the same position in different cell types. Okay? And finally, that the relative positioning is also cell type specific. And the relative positioning means that two chromosomes are facing each other in a very tight way in some cell type, and they are probably distant in other cell types. Is this suggesting you any kind of observation that you know?
While in the humans, for example, all these genes are located on different chromosomes. So maybe when they have in a specific cell type, they come closer because they haven't seen something.
This is a very interesting hypothesis. It's not proven in the sense that there are indications that sometimes, and we will see tomorrow morning, there is a single transcriptional factory that is in between different chromosomes. And so one theory is that that transcriptional factory actually takes care of coordinating genes that are placed on different chromosomes. This is not proven, but it's a theory. You were right. But there is an indication also from pathology. 2 minutes, because I promised you to stop earlier, so 2 minutes. Before we mentioned this kind of translocation in leukemias and this kind of blood disease. This is not happening in any other cell. Do you remember the Burkitt lymphoma, for example, that has a specific translocation between chromosome 14 and 11? Have you heard about that? Probably not. Don't be shame, I mean, just say no. Okay, no worry. In different leukemias, you have specific translocation, okay, that bring, for example, I don't know, a promoter of IgH in front of a completely different gene like MYC or whatever. It's a proto-oncogene. So MYC oncogene will be driven by the promoter of IgG, and this is the reason why it becomes a cancer, because MYC is a proliferating transcription factor and will make the cell proliferating like a crazy, okay? But the question is why it happens only in that particular cell type. You have this kind of translocation only in B lymphocytes. You never found in a muscle cell or in a brain cell or whatever else. Just because the two chromosomes in B cells, they are touching one each other, okay? And so they can recombinate. Cut and paste, okay? If they are far away, they cannot recombinate that way, okay? So this is the reason why. And there is a lot of attention from pathologists now to understand this kind of, you know, of the proximity of chromosomes, to understand whether this kind of recombination events are present also in different kind of cells and so on. Okay. So thank you very much for your attention. I wish you a very good bioinformatic lesson. Thanks. And also I express a good feeling with this classroom. Is I can get in touch with you better. Can you hear me correctly? Yes, okay. And you will see, I don't know if you... Have you already had class in this location during the triennial?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. So you will... For people coming from other cities or other countries, you will see in, let's say, 2-3 weeks how splendid the garden will be. So it's a very good location. Okay, see you tomorrow. Bye bye. Solo tutti i miei trucchi qui, no?
Sì, sì, no, non ci
che non funziona questo affare qua. Non so bene come si fa a uscire di qua. Adesso ci proverò di nuovo.